Welcome, listeners. I'm glad you are here.
Welcome back to another episode of the Live Vegan Podcast. This is your host, Kevin Leahy. And today we have a special episode for you. We wanted to give you the audio of our presentation that Ben and I did in Rochester, New York, a couple of weeks ago. I think we let you guys know we were going to be there. Some of you showed up. It was an awesome, awesome time. It was our first time doing a live appearance, and we kind of changed things up. We started with some activist tips, and then we went through a bunch of excuses. We let the crowd chime in and ask whatever excuse they wanted to ask. And then we sort of just summarized why we're doing what we're doing, and why we think it's so important to be an activist, not just to be vegan, but to be an activist. It is incredibly important to do more than just be vegan. That's my take, that's Ben's take, and so we tried to portray that as much as possible in this presentation. We do have video as well. We're thinking of putting it up on YouTube, but we just figured we'd put the audio here for you for this week. So hope you enjoy it. I know the audio quality is not perfect. There's a lot of background noise. It was a festival, a veggie festival, so obviously a lot of people in the background. But hopefully you can hear all the words. And if you have any questions, shout out to us. Let us know what you think. And maybe we'll come to another VegFest near you next year, because this year we're pretty much done with VegFest. All right. Enjoy.
So I'm Dr. Pat Barnett. I'm going to just kill a few minutes here while people come in. So my wife and I run the Rancho in Toronto. They run the Live Vegan Podcast. And I just met them, and I'm probably not going to do the greatest introduction, but these guys are really smart, and they're going to do their own introduction. So here you go. Do you need two microphones?
Thank you. Test. Make it sound?
Thank you. That was a great intro. And we are really excited because this is our first time with an interpreter. And I want to say vegan just to see what she says. You have to spell it out, so I kind of feel bad. We're going to say vegan a lot of times, and she's going to have to spell it out a lot of times. We are going to introduce ourselves. We are going to talk about some activist tips, and we're going to talk about some excuses that non-vegans typically use to remain non-vegan. My name is Kevin Leahy, and this is the infamous Ben Loa.
Infamous, huh?
We do have the Live Vegan Podcast. You can find us on iTunes. We put out a show every single Tuesday, and what we do is we have a different guest every single week, and we ask them how to be a more effective vegan activist. So we've had lots of inspiring guests on the show from the animal rights community.
Who is your favorite?
That's a hard one. I did like Captain Paul Watson. He's been in this game for so long, like 40 years of doing animal rights activist work. Okay, so first thing I want to say is, imagine yourself walking through the street and you see a puppy. The cutest puppy ever. This is what comes up if you Google cutest puppy ever. If you're a cat person, you can imagine it's a kitten. That's fine. And right next to the cutest puppy ever is a man with a baseball bat. And he's about to use the baseball bat against the cutest puppy ever. The question is, and I'm asking every single person who can hear my voice, what do you do? And don't say I want to get his autograph, because I know this is Negan. Don't say you want to take a selfie. Just pretend like you don't know this person. What do you do? What do you do in this situation? Ben and I think that there are only three options. The first option is to walk away. Keep silent. Say nothing. Do nothing. Just watch. The second option is to do something, whether it's to speak, whether it's to hold up a sign, or maybe it's to grab the bat, grab the person by the wrist, and say, enough, no more. But there's also a third option that people don't ever think about when I bring up this example. And the third option is to give him money. Is to go into your pocket, pull out your wallet, give him $20, and say, proverbially at least, thank you for your work. Good job. Now you might be outraged by option three. You might think that's ridiculous. Who would ever choose option three? But guess what? 98% of humanity chooses option three every single day. Not just once a day, every single meal, three times a day. 21 times a week, more than 1,000 times a year. Number one is being vegan. It's a non-action. It's not participating in the violence. Number two is to become an activist. And so we would like to ask you to become an activist, not just a vegan, but to become an activist because the animals deserve it. We need your voice.
Yeah, I mean, if any one of you would have tried to rescue that puppy or done something for that puppy, you can do the exact same thing for billions of beings that are dying every single day. So if you would speak up for the puppy, speak up for all the other victims too.
Yeah, if you don't like my analogy, change bat for a knife. Change puppy for a pig. Pigs are smarter than dogs. Do you guys know that pigs perform better than dogs when they play video games? This is real. You can look it up. There's a video of it. There's a video game where they move a little circle into a shaded area. And if they get it right, they get a reward. The dogs really try hard. But the pigs perform better every single time. It's just one way. But I think that proves that they are more cognitively aware. They are more intelligent. We're going to have questions at the end. Is that okay? Yeah, so we're going to leave like 15 minutes at the end for questions. So we're just going to introduce ourselves really quickly, who we are and how we became activists. Ben, could you start?
Okay, I'm going to. This is a long story. I'm going to try and keep it really, really short. So I'm about 15 years old. I don't even know what happened. I was halfway through a sausage, and I said to my parents, I'm not eating meat anymore. This was before the internet. It just happened. So like many vegetarians, I thought I was the ethical vegetarian. Lived my life, thought, oh, well, as long as nobody's dying. It took me about 17 years until one day I was driving past a cattle farm and thought, where are all the males? And looked it up, and I was appalled, and I felt stupid that I never thought of it before. Why did I never wonder where their males are? For anybody that isn't familiar, they're basically taken away at birth and raised for veal or low-grade meat. So the dairy industry is the meat industry. I lived my life about 4 years as what we call a quiet vegan, and I imagine there's lots of quiet vegans here. So I didn't even know any other vegans. I didn't know any other activists. I thought activists were crazy and just extreme, and I didn't get involved. And then one day a local actually animal sanctuary, and I live in southwestern Ontario, was having a fundraiser, and they had food trucks there that were selling meat or carcasses and secretions from other beings. So I messaged them, I asked them to change, they ignored me. So then I just started putting some pressure on them on social media. A lot of other people got behind and we all started putting pressure on them. And within 3 days, they changed that fundraiser to a completely vegan fundraiser. So at that point, I realized, wow, I can do something. Like I can actually make a difference. And then I got involved with a local save group. I went to march to close all slaughterhouses. I've done all kinds of activism now. But it just took that realization that I actually can do something and it can make a difference. But at that point, I realized I can't be quiet anymore, that this is what I'm going to do for the rest of my life.
Awesome. So, yeah, we're going to talk a little bit about how you can do more as an individual activist. My name is Kevin Lahey. My story started in Korea. That's why I'm wearing the Korean hat. I lived there for a number of years, and I eventually started working undercover in the Korean dog meat industry. So I spent more than a year working undercover in that industry, and then I came to the USA and worked undercover in the hog industry, if you want to call it the hog. I'm sorry, Ben. He doesn't like when I say hog. The pig slaughtering industry and the chicken industry. So I have more than 3+ years of experience working undercover on factory farms and in slaughterhouses. And I believe that one person, especially when you're talking about an undercover investigator, can make a huge difference, because corporations are really afraid of investigations. They do not want the misery, the suffering, the torture to be in public's eye. So one of the strongest measures they take is passing laws to make sure that undercover investigations are not legally allowed. We got to stop that. Because we just want people to know where their food comes from. All right, help on.
So yeah, this is a when we were asked to do this, we said, okay, what are we going to talk about? And we thought, we need to do a cry for help. And you know, it's coming from us, but really it's coming from the billions of victims that need each and every one of you to stand up and do something about this. And it doesn't mean, when people hear activism, they think of, you know, somebody going into a restaurant and doing a disruption, which is activism, can be effective. They think of you know, people standing on a sign, you know, which might reach some people. But there's so many different ways that you can get active. And it doesn't have to be the in-your-face, in-the-streets activism. There's a lot of behind-the-scenes stuff that needs to be done, and we need everybody to take part, or else we're not going to change. Because, like Kevin said, we're, you know, maybe 2 or 3% of the population, and of that, it's what, maybe, you know, 0.5% of the population of that is actually active. So, if we got 2 or 3%, if we got even 1/2 of the vegans that are out there to be active, we can really make a difference. And then that's when society starts to change.
Yeah, exactly. So we say one person can do so much. All right, so here are some ideas for individual activism. Obviously, the first is to go vegan. And we say, I know I said originally in the intro that that's not a form of activism, that you're just staying silent, but it is the first step. At least you're not contributing to the violence and to the suffering of animals any longer. Plus, being silent and just eating plants is a form of activism to some degree, because you're showing others that it can be done and you can still thrive. Holding up a sign.
Yeah, so one thing you could do is, I actually have a friend of mine, he's in North Carolina, his name's Ryan Phillips, and he for, I think it was 137 straight days, he's still in the street corner with a sign, every single day, and just stood there and had different signs to educating people about animal rights, about what non-human animals are going through. It's an awareness. You know, someone's probably not going to see that sign and go, oh, wow, okay, now I'm going to go vegan, because that sign says go vegan. But you planted a seed in their brain. You started to normalize that there are people out there that care about this.
I feel bad for the interpreter. Should we slow down? You okay? You good? Okay. She's struggling. She talks slower. Chalking. Has anyone ever seen the sign that says, in chalk, the film Earthlings changed my life? Has anyone ever seen that on social media? No? No one? I've seen it all over Facebook and Instagram. So there you go. A friend of mine started that, and he does it on overpasses so that cars can see it on a daily basis. It's a way to get the message out without breaking the law, right? Chalk just washes off, so it's really easy to do. And you can just write a simple message. You can draw a picture, but just chalk. Get to people as much as you can. While you're in the city, something like this, if we're not at a veg fest, but chalk the message, go vegan, or whatever you think would be powerful.
All right, well, now we're talking about the law. This is a bit of a gray area, but it happens all the time. So a lot of people, they take stickers. You can get them printed yourself. You can get them from PETA. You can get them from from there's companies that do it, there's not-for-profits that are just giving to you, and placing in places that people are going to see, and do stuff that's going to educate. So, for example, if you, in the grocery store, there, you might see a whole leg of a pig. Okay, most people think that that's a pig that lived a happy, long life, and, oh, okay, that's not so bad, because they don't realize that's a six-month-old baby that's laying there not freezing. So if there's a sticker that explains to people, this is a baby, this is actually a baby pig, or on chicken, and people don't realize they're 6 or 7 weeks old, how young they are. There's ways we can educate people, and because we need to get in front of people when they don't expect it, because otherwise they're just going to turn away and ignore you.
Yeah. Be careful where you put the stickers, though. We are not advocating you break the law. Social media. I think social media is the most powerful thing we can do as an individual in 2018, period. It's the best, most effective way to reach as many people as possible. It literally takes seconds to post a picture on your social media feed, and tens of thousands of people can see that. It is the long sword of our time. We used to fight with swords and shields. Now we fight with our phones, with our iPhones, with our social media accounts, with our Instagram accounts, with our Facebook accounts. So be a shining light and make your social media accounts open to the public. Don't keep it private. Keep it open and available, and show people what you're doing every day. Show people what you're eating and let them know what you're thinking.
If you're afraid of your account being too public, I have two. One of them's for my family. I got two kids I keep them separate. So I have another one that's just for activism, and that's one everybody knows me as. Another awesome one is mentoring. So how many people here consider themselves like seasoned vegans? Like, you've been vegan a long time. You know how to answer all the questions. Nobody? Well, okay, we got a lot to teach you people.
Yeah, lots of hands.
So have you ever thought about doing mentoring? So what there's a few mentoring programs, and they're fantastic. So one of them, we actually just interviewed someone from them, from Challenge 22 Plus. There's Vegan Outreach does them. There's a few organizations that have mentorship programs. And you just sign up and say, hey, I'd like to be a mentor. And they will find people through social media that are interested in veganism. And then they'll partner them up with you. Because a lot of people will say, I care about animals, but I don't know what to do. So then they partner them up with somebody that does know what to do, and you teach them. You teach them the ethics of it. You teach them, how to shop, where to shop, things to get, things to eat. And then hopefully maybe how to take the next step and become an activist. So it's an awesome, awesome way to reach people. And there's multiple different groups. So I advise as many people that are comfortable with it, reach out and find somebody to mentor with.
Yeah, I believe you need 6 months of experience to be a mentor. So if you've been vegan for 6 months or more, then you would be a great mentor. You need a little bit of patience too sometimes. All right, so starting a vegan business, I think this VegFest is a perfect example of how you can reach so many people through your products, through your creativity. A lot of these people here are not just entrepreneurs, they are artists. They are a collaboration of the two. And we need an alternative. Ben and I could stand here all day and say, go vegan, here are the reasons to go vegan. But if you don't have an alternative, a really good tasting, mouth-watering alternative, which you're eating right back there, I see it, then our words are going to fall on deaf ears. So we need vegan businesses to offer good, healthy, tasty alternatives.
And not just food.
Not just food. That's right.
There's
clothing.
There's see now it's Wooksy. They changed the name. It was Woolly Coats. So they are basically an anti-fur movement, but they made anti-fur coats. There's lots of them. And vegan chef, we don't actually mean be a chef. Just use your food. Reach to people through food. You go to work and you got a little hot luck or something, take something that you know people are going to love. Maybe don't even tell them it's vegan. And then when they ask for the recipe, then they explain to them, oh, this is actually vegan food. And they're like, oh, really? I had no idea vegan food could taste that good.
Yeah, and we said vegan fitness trainer. You don't have to be a fitness trainer to do this. But I say whatever you're good at, everyone here is good at something. And most likely, the animal rights movement needs you. There's a need for it. So whatever you're good at, quadruple down on it. Those are the words of Gary Vee. You guys know Gary Vee, the social media guru. He's not yet vegan. He will be one day, I predict. And he says, whatever you're good at, quadruple down on it. do that thing. Make sure you're passionate about it too, but just bring that to the movement, because we need all walks of life. We need everybody to do what they're good at. All right, so working with friends.
Very clever.
You like that?
Very, very clever. So, there's lots and lots of different organizations. This is just scratching the surface. But we just want to explain to people that might not understand what they are, what your options are, and what maybe you can do. So the SAVE movement is huge. It's really big in Canada. It's spread around the world. Western New York doesn't have a whole lot of movement action with the SAVE movement. So what it means is you go to a slaughterhouse and you visit the babies as they're taken to their deaths. Now this sounds horrific. But it'll change your life when you see it, when you hear what they go through. Not everyone maybe should do it, but I am yet to meet a person that went to a vigil or a slaughterhouse and said, "I wish I didn't go." Because what you see, what you learn, you can learn. Well, first of all, you can take pictures, you can take videos, and you can share that with people and show them, look, this is what they're going through. This is what six-month-old babies sound like, what their screams sound like as they're being unloaded off the truck. And hopefully try and go through to them. But you can even explain to people the stories of what it smells like, what it sounds like, what it feels like. And if possible, get someone that's not vegan to go out, because if they can witness that and then eat a pork chop, then they need some serious help.
Yeah, and the SAVE movement was started in Toronto, little fun fact. We had the founder on our podcast, Anita Crines, and she was famous for the pig trial. She got arrested for giving water to a pig, and then it became a famous case where she won. The animal rights community rallied behind her, and she won that case. And she talked about it on her podcast. It was great. So Anonymous for the Voiceless. You guys have probably seen the white masks and people holding video footage.
I see a shirt right here.
Black shirt. There you go. Yeah. You want to stand up so you can show everyone the shirt? Anonymous for the Voiceless. That's a powerful group. Yeah, good job. Thank you. Thank you for the work you do. Yeah, it's a great group, and it's actually the fastest growing group of activists worldwide. It's growing faster than any other group of activists, period, by a lot. So if you don't have an Anonymous for the Voiceless group around you, then you can start one pretty easily, because it's really, really popular right now.
It's also great for the introverted people, or the people that are just shy, and they don't want to be in your face or speaking or even to be seen because you hide behind a mask. So it's a great way to get into activism for someone that's just really, really timid.
Cool.
And then for the people that aren't very timid, there are disruptions. There's the DXC groups, but there's other groups too that do disruptions. And a lot of people think, oh, that's too aggressive, it's not effective. But what it's doing is trying to just shake the social norm. So it's getting attention, and very few groups get the media attention that DXC and other disruption groups get, because they do something that just shocks people, and then it gets in the paper. And maybe people think, oh, that's crazy, but then they're introduced to words like speciesism that they've never heard before, and they start looking it up and learning about it. Or they learn about a fact that the disruption talked about, that maybe they didn't realize what's awful about the dairy industry. I mean, many people don't even realize, and I was one of them, they didn't even realize the cows had to be pregnant in order to get milk. Right? There's lots of people right now, so you just get the conversation started.
I think speciesist was a word that you didn't know. Speciesist? Yeah, that's a hard one. You might have to spell that one. So that proves the point. It's a new word that people don't know. It's similar to racism and sexism, or xenophobia. It's taking human species as a superior species. Speciesism. That's the word. We didn't make it up, by the way. It's a real word. All right, so yeah, the rest here, marches, start a group, organize a veg fest like this. This is a great way to get people out and to introduce non-vegans to vegan food. So this is a great form of activism. It's fun, we're happy, we're smiling, it's sunny out, we're eating great vegan food, and everybody's happy.
Yeah, I think a lot of people here, a lot of them aren't vegan. I wonder if any of the people even sitting here aren't. So, I met your non-vegan mom at a veg fest.
That's right. My mom is a whole different story. We could talk about her for a long time. All right, so now we're going to talk about excuses. We don't have that much time. We have about 5 or 10 minutes. So what we'd like to do is ask the crowd if there are any excuses. What do I mean by an excuse?
Okay, so, well, the non-vegans will call them reasons, but we know there's actually no, there is not a single logical reason to not be vegan. There isn't one, and I've heard them all. Well, I say I heard them all, but I keep hearing really, really wacky, crazy things, so maybe I haven't heard them all. But a lot of, there's things that, to be a good activist, you have to be able to know what to say. You need to know how to deal with these excuses. So we were just wondering, I mean, we've got a whole bunch that we can cover, but if there's anything here, one that maybe stumps you sometimes that you're not sure how to respond to, or if there's someone here that's not vegan and is brave, then maybe tell us why, and we'll tell you why that's not wrong, too.
Every episode, Ben brings an excuse to me, and I am totally unprepared, and I have to answer it. What did we do last week? Remember? Just to give them that minute.
There's I can throw one at you.
Sure, go ahead.
Okay, God says that we can eat animals, Ben. Right. I call them yeah buts, because they always start with, yeah, but. I get your point, yeah, but.
Yeah, this is a common one. So God says we should kill animals for food, and therefore we should not be vegan, right? I'm sure you've heard this before. I'm sure 2.2 billion humans on planet Earth identify as Christian, just looking at one religion. So we have to be able to see veganism as compatible with Christianity and with these other religions. And my take on this is, what would God say? What would Jesus say? Let Jesus come down to earth and look at a slaughterhouse. How would he react? Would he smile and be like, yeah, this is exactly what I meant. I want this to happen. I'm pretty sure Jesus, if you had to define him in one word, it would be love or sacrifice or something along those lines. It wouldn't be greed or indulgence or selfish desire. It's the opposite. It's giving to others. It's protecting others. And every major religion on earth says the same thing. It's the golden rule. Treat others like you would want to be treated. Who here would like to be eaten?
Also, there's actually no verse in the Bible that says if you are vegan, you'll go to hell. There isn't, but there is one that says that we have free will. So if we leave, God left that choice up to us, and we can't, you know, if you're Christian, you can't blame him for your choices. Okay, does anybody have one that they might?
Yeah, please. Okay, great. So if you didn't hear, if the world goes vegan, do you mean overpopulation of animals or people? You're right, animals will overpopulate.
Oh, they'll just take over and become our overlords? Yes, yes.
Right. Animal law. George Orwell. So, has anyone ever seen how animals are brought into existence on factory farms? Maybe through video? I worked on one, so I saw it firsthand. And I'm sad to say I actually had to take part in it, otherwise I would have lost my cover and my job. So I know exactly what they do. They artificially inseminate these animals to keep them pregnant perpetually for their entire lives. They intentionally breed animals into existence so that we can kill them for food. So, if the world goes vegan overnight, okay, yes, there's a point there. Literally overnight, we do have a lot of animals. We have to figure out what to do with all those animals. But more realistically, we gradually shift to veganism. And we stop breeding these animals into existence, and they simply won't exist in the same numbers. And other animals will exist, because instead of farmland, we'll have wildlife, and we'll have wild birds, and more wild deer, and more rabbits, and more wildlife. So it's not about life on Earth versus no life on Earth. It's just a different kind of life.
Yeah, there's a stat, actually, that was just released a couple months ago. That 96% of the mammal life on this planet is either humans or livestock for humans. Only 4% of that is actually wildlife. Yeah. Let that sink in. That's because of all the land that we need to take to grow food for animals that we eat instead of just growing food for ourselves.
And they're mostly chickens. So we think that those chickens should not be bred into existence, and other wild birds should be, because they would have better lives. That would be an overall better world. that answer the question?
Yeah, what do you got? Oh, it's hunting for conservation.
Yeah. So if you didn't hear, hunting is helping animals, she said. So this is how I see hunting. You're not helping animals by shooting them in the head with a gun.
Okay, that's perfect. How's that helping animals? Yeah,
you're not helping animals. You might want to say that you are helping animals because of overpopulation, but there are other ways to do it. We have bridges that we could build over overpasses or over highways. We could spend that money that we put into the hunting industry and put it elsewhere and protect those animals instead of shooting them. We don't need to shoot them.
Their overpopulation isn't a problem for them. It's a problem for us. So it's just human arrogance that says, we're in our way, we need to get rid of them. Well, they're in our way because we took all the land that they were living on.
Who else? I know there's a lot now. Now I see I instigated people. Wait, over there. Let's go this way. Oh, you had your hand up first. Okay, sorry. Go ahead. Yep. So the objection is if everyone goes vegan, lots of jobs will be lost. Right? And there's an industry, a big industry, an economic benefit, you could say, you could even argue, to certain nations, to certain areas, to continue this industry. I get it. Do you want to take
it? So they're forgetting, they're ignoring two things. If we stop eating animals, that doesn't mean we stop eating. Right? So we're creating an entire new economy based on plant-based foods. So there are multiple, actually, animal agriculture farmers that have switched. They said, you know what, this is not right. I'm not doing this anymore. And they didn't go out of business. They started growing crops.
Is anyone here from the Elmhurst Dairy? Ex-Dairy? Booth? No?
Yeah, that was a perfect example.
You guys know the story? Yeah, so they used to...
Yeah, it used to be a dairy farm. They stopped having cows and shipping them off to be killed. And they started making plant-based milks, and they're hugely successful. So yeah, it can be done.
I also like the example of Kodak and Canon, right? One went digital, the other did not. So you have to adapt. You have to be smart.
Does Kodak still exist?
It does not.
Oh, good example. Also, they're ignoring history because in the middle of the 1800s, people used to worry that in the South the cotton industry was going to die. Right? The slavery was abolished, and there's still cotton.
New industries will form, new jobs will emerge. This VegFest is a perfect example of that. It's a booming industry. Go ahead.
So if this is from a vegetarian, they say, I understand milk is never made, but if there's more chicken producing eggs, why not eat
them? So what's wrong with eating eggs?
Yeah.
Is that
backyard?
Are these wild chickens that are just run around all over the place and you can pick up their eggs?
Yeah.
Because those don't exist.
Do you want to take this one? All right, so yeah, backyard chickens is... It's funny because they bring this up as if it somehow resembles reality as it is now. 99% of animals are on factory farms, and we're now talking about the 1% potentially who are treated more humanely and are not slaughtered for their eggs. Maybe just the eggs are taken. And now if we're talking about rescue chickens, or we're talking about chickens that are bought and breeded for this purpose, I think that's where the difference lies. If you're keeping chickens so that you can have their eggs, you're exploiting them.
And you're buying them from somewhere.
Right. But if you're keeping chickens for other reasons, to give them good, you know, like a sanctuary, for example. Anyone here from a sanctuary? You know, I'm not suggesting that we eat the eggs from those chickens. You don't need to, so why do it? But there wouldn't be anything wrong with that if it was in a sanctuary and the chickens were taken care of, and you weren't doing it for the reason of obtaining eggs.
So basically, there's no exploitation involved.
Exactly.
However, you actually, and anybody from the sanctuary will tell you this, you can take those eggs and you feed them back to the chickens, and it gives them eggs for protein. So it's actually very, very beneficial for them to eat them. So to take away from them is taking away from their food that they can have.
Yeah, so
thanks, Maxine.
Eggs, as rightfully just pointed out, are chickens' periods. You can think about that the next time you have a runny yolk. I'm sorry, I had to.
Anybody with some of them more tasteful? Oh, so okay. So this is what Kevin.
Poop,
Kevin
though.
Yeah, Kevin uses this a lot. His thing is, so that's why you kill animals. So basically, what was just said is we need fertilizer. We need them to poop. So the logic here is we need to raise these animals, kill them, so because we need their poop to grow food that we mostly use to feed those animals. And it just goes on and on and on. We can't. There are natural fertilizers. There are many. There's synthetic fertilizers. I'm not a farmer, but I know multiple vegan farms that don't use fertilizer. I do know people that get it from sanctuaries as well. So there are more ethical ways to get it. But it just seems pretty strange logic to raise animals to kill,
yeah,
to take their poop. And
I would say, we don't need to, but if we did need to, you don't have to kill them, right? You can keep animals on a sanctuary, for example, harvest their poop, use it for fertilizer without the whole slaughtering part. But I would argue first, like you mentioned, we don't need their poop. There are other ways.
That one actually can be legitimate.
Yeah.
Okay? So I'm going to use the example of like the Inuits, okay?
Can we just say what he said so everyone can hear?
Oh,
he said a food desert. So, like, there's no vegan options available. If you're in that situation, how can you be a vegan?
So I wouldn't go up to the Arctic Circle and tell the Inuits that they need to go vegan. Because, I mean, where are they even going to get vegan food? They're not growing it. To ship it up there, the cost is ridiculous. I mean, like a case of water is like $30. So I get that. So that's an actual, that can be a legitimate reason. But the people that are using that excuse usually live in the city, somewhere where you can get lots of plants and vegetables. It's not an issue for them. They're trying to use someone else's situation to excuse them from creating unnecessary harm and suffering. But yeah, if someone was here that lived in the Arctic Circle and said, I need to fish or I need to kill a seal or else I will die, I get that because that's survival. And I'll even argue that if you are eating animals for necessity, that it's your only way to survive, that's still a veganist idea. It's still veganism if you're doing it to survive. Because veganism is about not creating any unnecessary suffering. And none of us need to create that harm. To live, maybe they do.
Right. Has anyone seen the movie Alive? Yeah. People were trapped somewhere in the Arctic and they had to eat human meat in order to survive. That has no bearing to where we are today, here in Rochester in 2018. Morality is dependent upon your circumstances. It is circumstantial, like Ben was just saying.
This is only my second time to Rochester, but there's vegan food here, right?
Right. Lots of different tasty options. Yeah. Yep. So she said, isn't being vegetarian enough? Some people will say, isn't being vegetarian enough? I think it's a great step in the right direction, depending on where you're coming from, depending on what your starting point is. If you're eating meat three times a day, 21 times a week, more than 1,000 times a year, and then you go vegetarian, that's a great step, and I encourage that. And I would hug anyone who says I'm now vegetarian. But there's a little bit more And I didn't know this for many years. I was vegetarian from 2002 to 2010. Then I became vegan in 2010. But the cruelty behind the dairy industry and the egg industry is real. In fact, it's crueler in a lot of ways than the meat industry. The dairy industry, for example, how do we keep a mother pregnant? How do we keep her producing milk? By keeping her perpetually pregnant and taking away her baby. If you keep a mother pig and a baby pig, her baby, next to each other, what happens? The baby drinks the milk. That's not good if you're trying to sell milk to humans, right? So you have to rip the baby away. And where do you put the baby? Into the veal industry. The baby gets slaughtered at a young age for veal. And then you have to keep the mother on not a healthy diet, and you have to take her milk so that you can give it to humans. It's very cruel. And then when she's done, when she's finally spent, after all these years of giving birth and having her baby ripped away and all her milk being taken away, she's sent to slaughterhouse as well. So there's no difference, really. It's just prolonged torture.
Or if you talk about the egg industry and the male chicks dying basically at birth, like pretty much the day or the next day, they're going to ground up a lot. So how those probably, you'd probably be committing less suffering or contributing to less suffering eating a steak than you would eating eggs often. Because those babies that are, you know, a day old, they're just killed right away. So I imagine anybody that's an ethical vegetarian, once they learn that, they would want to switch. I know I did. I lived for 17 years not knowing that, and I wish someone had told me a lot sooner.
Quick story, when I was an undercover investigator, I did work in a battery cage factory farm, and it's like an ocean of birds trapped in cages, so small that they cannot spread their wings. It's the most amount of misery you can fit in square footage. And so when I go through the supermarket now and I see a dozen eggs, I see that as condensed suffering. Condensed suffering for sale to humans. And I think it's the most amount. Every egg is one chicken trapped for 24 hours. They lay one egg per day, which is not natural, by the way. They've been selectively bred to lay as fast and as often as possible. But one chicken, as it is now, lays one egg in a 24-hour period. So a dozen eggs, that's 12 chickens in a 24-hour period trapped against their will in terrible, terrible conditions. So yeah, I say we just need to educate a little further, but certainly encourage them to move in that direction. I think that's a great step.
How much time do we have?
We're about out of time. How about two more real quick? Two more? Yeah, go ahead.
Well, if those with their net trapped, they get sick, and then they overcome with antibiotics.
That's right.
Well, unless they want them to be antibiotic free, then they'll just let them die.
Right. So, I think it's 70 to 80% of all antibiotics used in this country, in the USA, are given to farm animals just to keep them alive. Because they are on farms which provide such miserable conditions, they need those antibiotics just to keep them alive. That's terrible. So the animals are the ones that are suffering in the name of profit. Two more. Go ahead. Sure. Thank you. Let's bring up the doctor.
Change hats here. So actually, I'm not a pediatrician, I'm not an expert on that. I do know that the official recommendation for babies under a year, you're not supposed to give them cow's milk. So I actually don't understand how the formula part works. The best thing that babies can get is mother's milk, which is very different from cow's milk. Right? Yeah, so I actually don't know the answer to that, and I would give you an answer. I do know that the way we know about vitamins is basically because people kept trying to invent formulas. And so mother's milk is by far the best thing. You know, if you can nurse your baby for 3 or 4 years, that's fabulous. If you do it for 6 months to a year, that's great. And then after that, start introducing regular food. But there's no need for cow's milk, right? I mean, think about it. What other animal can you name that's dependent on the milk of another species? So we'll talk about it offline.
Is that an excuse, too, used by someone that is vegan? So they can be vegan. Even if the baby can't, they can. So that doesn't, that's, again, using someone else's situation for themselves. Well, I mean, if a baby needs that or else they're going to die, then sure. I mean, it sounds like they probably don't, but I'm sure the research is out there. Actually, and maybe Dr. Mills in our next series. And he comes up.
What are the chances we have a vegan doctor in the house? I'm so happy.
Okay, there was one
sorry,
last one.
Last question. Yeah, sorry, we're out of time. Yeah, totally. I get that question a lot. The question was, have I ever blown my cover because I've gotten too emotional seeing the animals in the situations that they were in? I used to secretly kiss them. Look over my shoulder. Don't let anyone see me. I had to be sentimental at times when I was alone, and I could tell when I was alone and no one was going to notice what I was doing. But in most of the times, most of the situations, you have to be callous. You have to be able to compartmentalize and put it aside, because the best thing to do, if I'm not there in that factory farm, it's going to happen anyway. So I might as well be there and take footage of it so that I can show the world. And I think that that's a slightly better situation than me not being there and me blowing my cover. So yeah, it's hard, sure, but you just have to sort of put it aside.
Kevin okay. actually has a presentation about working undercover too that's just fascinating. It's actually when I met him, so maybe next year you come back and talk about working undercover.
Sure, yeah, I did almost blow my cover a few times. It's kind of like, I think, I've never been a quarterback, but I imagine it's like asking a quarterback, did you ever worry about getting sacked? It's like, yeah, all the time.
So where can we see your video?
Yeah, for legal reasons, I think I'd rather not say which ones, which investigations I was responsible for, but I will say I worked for Mercy for Animals. So
we wanted to use video to try to be an activist. Where could we get footage that we could then
Totally. Yeah. So the question is, where can we get footage and use it as an activist? You know, undercover footage that's obtained through undercover investigations. And the answer, to be honest, is I don't know exactly. I think you could probably go through YouTube and find a lot of videos. You could download them. You could upload them on your own channel. You could even edit them. You might want to get permission, depending on who uploaded it. You might want to send a direct message, maybe to Mercy for Animals, and ask them for some footage. I know they're really, really good at sharing that because they want as many eyeballs on the footage as possible. So that's the organization I worked for. I also worked for an organization called CARE, Coexistence of Animal Rights on Earth, which is based in Korea. So those two organizations I know would share their footage for sure.
And you can always show her things. Because
yeah.
Sean Monson, the made Earthlings, he wants everyone to see it. You don't have to buy it. But what does Anonymous use?
Yeah, does anyone know what Anonymous for the Voiceless will use in their videos?
I personally don't know. I think you have to get in contact with someone higher on the phone. We just use the video to
Okay, so we're not really sure where the video footage is obtained.
But Earthlings is easy to get, and it shows a lot of that stuff. And
yeah,
anybody here that's seen it, it's really difficult.
Okay, so I just want to wrap up by saying a couple of things.
Why do you always go to superheroes?
Because we live in an era of superhero love.
Okay.
We're obsessed with superheroes. And so I want to ask you guys, this is Batman and the Joker, if you can't tell. What makes a superhero a superhero? What makes a supervillain a villain? What makes Batman good and the Joker bad? Or Captain America good and Thanos bad? What qualities does a hero possess that makes him a hero? And conversely, what qualities does a villain possess that makes him a villain? And I predict A hero, a superhero, is someone who fights for and protects others, who does so at the cost of their own sacrifice. Without their selfish, greedy interests, they fight for and protect others. And the villain does the exact opposite. He takes from others for his own greedy, indulgent, selfish desires. And so veganism is not an extreme ideology. It's simply stating that animals are others and that they should be included under that realm of moral concern. And so I'm not calling, by the way, meat eaters villains. That's not what I'm trying to say. I believe that the vast majority of people who consume animal products simply are unaware that their actions are causing so much suffering. Whereas a villain knows exactly what's happening. And that's the distinction. So I would encourage us in this culture of loving superheroes to think, what would Captain America do? Or your favorite superhero, whoever he may be, or she, sorry. I have a 5-year-old daughter. She loves Wonder Woman. What would she do if she saw a slaughterhouse? What would she do if she saw a hog farm with gestation crates everywhere? Cages so small that they cannot turn around for their entire lives. I predict real heroes would choose not only to not give their money to that industry, but to do something more, to become an activist and to fight for and protect animals. Anything you want to add?
Okay, I can't talk that.
See all the superhero things?
It worked, okay? You took the superhero thing and you made it work, so. Yeah, so please, just, if you're not involved, find a way. Even reach out to the local organization if you're shy and you don't want to get, you know, in front of people. Ask them how you can help. Maybe you can do something behind the scenes. People always need people with graphic design help or social media help or photography or writing or anything. Just please somehow, some way, get involved because we can make this stop.
Great. Yeah, and I think we're just going to wrap up by saying animals matter. And why? I know we talked about George Orwell before in 1984 and the pigs walking upright and speaking English. Okay, animals do not speak the English language, but they have their own form of communication. They have their own language. They can speak to each other. They can communicate to each other, and they can communicate with us. They might not walk upright and have opposable thumbs, but they have eyes, ears, noses, mouths, teeth, tongues, throats, stomachs, hearts, all the organs that we share. But most importantly, they have brains and they have a central nervous system. And that gives them the ability to suffer. It gives them the ability to experience misery and pain. And it also gives them the ability to experience joy and happiness and friendship and, yes, even love. Everyone here who has a dog or a cat at home knows this. Animals are capable of love. And so I say animals have way more in common with us than they do not. And that's why they deserve more moral respect.
I'm good, buddy. That was beautiful.
Okay. All right, we're done.
So thank you all for coming
today. Thank you for listening to the Live Vegan Podcast.